Hey everyone that's listening and tuning in, this is Parsha with the Author's Leverage, and today I have a dear friend of mine who is joining the conversation because we're going to talk about his book, The Lovable Leader, some of the beauty of the contents that he has poured into this, and we're also going to have an author-to-author conversation for those that are tuning in and just curious about how another author has been able to do what they've done and what he's doing now with his book. I think it's going to be an exciting conversation with Mr. Jeff Gibbard. But thanks for being here for the Author's Leverage. Let's jump in.
You're listening to the Author's Leverage. You've written a book, you got it published, and you know you can make a much bigger impact with it than you already have. Maybe you're in the process of writing and publishing and want to be smart about how you help others and make more money while doing it. Welcome to the Author's Leverage Podcast, your guide to building a profitable business and changing more lives with your published work. This is the number one show that brings you tips on making you a more successful author from the very best experts around. Every week, our mission is to help you blast through the noise and get you clear on your path to success as an author. You'll be equipped with practical tips and insights from host Parshel Tashi and her featured guests, and you'll leave each episode more excited, more confident to get that dream authorship life that you deserve. So sit back, relax, and get ready. We're about to get real. We're about to clear. And from here, the sky's the limit. Here's your host, a former school teacher turned creative media entrepreneur and now founder of the Author's Leverage, Parshel Tashi.
Woohoo! Joining me today is the amazing, infamous Jeff Gibbard. Jeff is the author of The Lovable Leader, a professional speaker, and the founder of several companies, including Super Productive and the Superhero Institute, a certification program for coaches that want to help their clients grow revenues and unlock their potential to make a positive impact on the world. Jeff is also the host of his own popular podcast called Shareable. Welcome, 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 Jeff, to the show. It's been a long time coming, man.
That intro is so fire. Can I just tell you, that is so fire. That looks so good.
Oh, I appreciate it, man. I do. Well, thank you for being here as always. Like, I love talking to you. I love just your energy, your spirit, and so much of it has gone into your book. And I know that in the bio, we didn't really hear a lot about your experiences, but I know that you come from a space of being someone who started out in, you know, aspects of business and the corporate space. And, you know, as a leader, like, you've learned so, so much. So fill us in also a little bit of your background, how you arrived to where you are today.
Yeah. So I, and thank you for having me. I'm so glad we got the chance to like sit down and do this. Like, long time coming, definitely. All right. So here's the long and short of it is, I never really knew what I was going to be when I grew up. So like, I tried to be a professional basketball player, tried to be a professional filmmaker, tried to be a professional photographer. I had all these different like ambitions of things I wanted to do. Went through a period in my 20s where I was just totally lost. I was like, you know what? While I figure it out, I'm going to work in restaurants. I'm going to do my thing. And, you know, I tried to start a personal chef service. That was my first like real entrepreneurial venture that I tried to dig into. And while it failed, I learned a lot about what I didn't know. And it was that led me to go and get my MBA at Drexel University after that. Because I was like, yeah, I got to figure out how this business thing works. Came out, and it was around the time of social media. Went into a consulting firm, and I quickly learned what I probably had known my entire life, which is that I am not destined to have a boss. I am just not equipped for it. I'm psychologically unemployable. I cannot have a boss. Cannot be told no. I need the freedom to be able to stretch and try things and do stuff and pursue all my interests and passions. And part of it comes down to like, just, you know, I have ADHD and I chase the dopamine. I like to go and find things to do. And doing just one thing was always very stale for me. So kind of the way that that leads into the story of the book is that a lot of the stuff that I learned being a really terrible employee is kind of what helped me to understand my leadership philosophy, which was, what are all of the reasons why I can't exist in these places? Like, what are the things that make me feel disconnected, that make me feel shut down, make me feel unappreciated? And I started looking at all those traits of the bad bosses, and I wrote them all down, and I figured out that what I was looking at was the opposite of what I felt like a good environment would look like. And as I analyzed that and I studied it more, and, you know, long story short, came to, you know, really boil it down into what is the philosophy of lovable leadership.
That is so powerful. And it really speaks to just your intention with that too, because to know that you're unemployable, right? And to, with your experiences, to be like, yep, this is how it's not supposed to work. Yeah. I think that's just a beautiful place to start, because you're really aware of a lot of the challenges. Like, what do you feel like in your discovery, what you've put in the book, to be, I guess, the biggest mistakes that most leaders that are in this position are making?
Yeah, I often say about the book is that I wrote a book about, that's a guidebook to creating an environment that I could actually work in. And a lot of it came down to a couple of really important things that I noticed that were common threads in all of the jobs that I left, all the ones where I felt like I didn't want to stay there, versus all the things that I felt when I worked for myself. So I kind of looked at those different elements. And this could sound very like Jeff-centric, like, oh, this is like specifically what Jeff thinks is a good thing. But if you talk to people, you'll notice this is a pattern, right? So one is that I didn't feel like people cared about me. So when I was at a job and I felt like, well, these people don't care about me. Well, why am I going to be loyal? Why am I going to work hard? Why am I going to put in the extra effort? Why am I going to do anything? I'll give you a quick story. I worked for this consulting firm right out of my MBA. And I was driving at the time this little Honda Insight. I don't know if you remember the original Honda Insight, 70 miles to the gallon. You could basically fit it on a large person's foot. Very tiny.
Yeah.
Rear wheel drive. This thing was not built for anything but like straightaways and highway driving. This was not like, this wasn't even a city car. And we're, you know, I'm in Philly and we get one of those really bad snowstorms, like the not good ones, the ones that like you're really not supposed to leave home for. And I remember calling in. I was like, hey, listen, car I got, it's not really ideal for this sort of situation. I think I really should be working from home today. And they were like, yeah, you're going to need to be in the office. And mind you, we're talking like lots of snow. We're talking icy roads. We are talking treacherous conditions. And there I am driving this little, sounded like a lawnmower. And they have me driving through the icy snow. And mind you, this company was at the top of a hill. So there was a very good chance I would slide all the way backwards. It was really bad. And it just expressed to me very clearly, you don't care about me. You don't care about my safety. And real quick background of that, and I think you and I have talked about this, but my mom got into a tragic car accident on my last day of high school that almost killed her. She was in the operating room for 9 hours, got like 8 pints of blood, barely survived this whole thing. So I got a lot of steeped trauma about car crashes. And when they made me drive in on that, it was a very clear indication that I wasn't being cared for. So the first was care was a big thing. So I'll pause right there for a second. I'm going to tell you there's two other things that were really big and kind of really dovetail into that.
Oof. I can just imagine even you saying that, just like showing up to work that day. It's just like, I just imagine your feelings about all of it just completely changed.
Yeah.
Completely changed. And your willingness and your motivation as an employee was probably like, what happened after that?
Well, I mean, first of all, nothing was happening that day. Like, it wasn't like we didn't have important meetings. Right. It was a snow day. Like, so there's nothing going on. So I'm checked out after that. So that was the first thing. Care. Notice that was a big thing that was missing. And really, when I thought about how, you know, any of the people that I brought on when I started working for myself, I always really cared about them as people. Like, if they were sick, I was like, who cares? Don't worry about work.
Yeah.
Like, go take care of yourself. Do your thing. Right. Like, you're a human being first. Whatever this stuff is not that important. So care was a big one. The second one was trust. And I noticed that most of the people that I didn't get along with, the managers that I didn't see eye to eye with, I didn't trust them. And they didn't trust me. They didn't trust me to be able to oversee my own work. They needed to like look after me and make sure I was doing what I was supposed to do and this and that and the other thing. And I didn't trust their intentions. I didn't think that they were going to like have my back if I needed it. If, you know, I had to advocate for something, I didn't trust that they were going to have my best interest in mind. So trust was the second big one. And I got stories upon stories about how that falls apart. And the third thing that's really closely connected to the other two of these, which is safety. And specifically safety as it relates to, if you want me to go and accomplish something big, you better make sure that I feel safe to go and go after that. Because I was always the person, you know, we've been in enough stuff together. Like, you've seen how I roll. I just blurt out ideas, right? And if I'm in an environment where I don't feel safe to be able to contribute an idea that might be stupid, how are you going to get my good ideas if you don't allow me to blurt out my bad ideas? How do you create an environment where people feel the ability to go after what they're going to go after, but feel safe enough to know that it's okay if they make a mistake for that? You need to give people that freedom, that safety to be able to do that and to show up fully expressed as who they are. I mean, that's the other thing. People show up with all their different identities. They come in as full human beings. And if you create an environment where any part of them has to be checked at the door, whether it's, you know, it's an experience that they had outside of work, one of their many intersexual identities, they can't show up with that. They feel like they have to hide it or they have to adapt or assimilate in some way that's not them. How are you creating safety for them to bring their full expressive self to work where they can do their best work? So I saw those as really the three pillars of lovable leadership: care, trust, and safe travels. Safe travels being safety on the way to a destination, right? So that became the foundation of all things lovable leadership. And then as I went through the book, I really started to expound upon all of those things. And just to kind of like hammer home the point that this isn't a Jeff thing, this is kind of a universal thing. If you look at Gallup studies year after year, employee engagement, why people leave, why people stay in jobs, growth opportunities, they leave because of managers or not having growth opportunities. They don't see that, you know, the company values them or cares about them. They, you know, they don't get the kind of benefits that they can get elsewhere. I mean, that's right there an example that you don't care enough about me, or maybe you just don't have the opportunity to care about me and somewhere else does. So there's all of these different reasons that if you look across the industries and why people leave, that's all, the whole quiet quitting nonsense that just came out was people establishing their boundaries. And when that's not being respected, they check out. So if you can create an environment where you respect people's boundaries, where you create safety for them, where you show you care about them, where you trust them enough to do their work from home instead of making them come into the office on a snow day or in the midst of a pandemic, you're going to have a lot more success with the people that you're leading on your team because you're going to treat them like people with trust, respect, kindness, empathy, all the things that we actually really want, instead of what most leadership books have tended to be about, which is how do we get people to work harder so we can extract more value from their labor? I mean, I don't know. I got a whole chapter in the book or a whole part in the book that's about how you fire someone the right way. Like, how do you love someone on the way out? You know, that's how I tend to think about leadership is it's the whole spectrum of care.
I mean, that's huge. I mean, to your point, a lot of companies are really just driven by the bottom line, right? And how do we get all the, you know, like I say, our humans to do what we want to hit this bottom line? And it really makes for a work environment that's just not conducive to, you know, being a place and an environment for really work culture, right? That's what it's about, like creating a culture that is good and strong and positive towards, right, a win-win for everyone across the board.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, even think about the term human resources, right? Like, we don't talk about it. We just say HR and we say human resources, but we don't really think, what do you do with a resource? You use a resource. Yeah, you use a resource until it's all used up. So, I mean, HR is going to be the department that's typically going to hire me to come in and speak, might buy some of my books. So please, I'm not trying to offend you, but like, it's not the right term. And it's also, if you think about the way most HR functions, they're there to protect the interests of the company and not there to protect the interests of the actual humans. The people, so I think that's somewhere we could really rethink how we structure business. We really need people to be advocating for the labor force, not for the owners.
Right, right. What would be a better name for that? I mean, instead of human resources, what would be Jeff Gibbard's title of that department?
The Human Care Consortium, HCC.
Okay.
I don't know, I just made that up right now. Yeah. So like if that exists, I'm sorry. If that doesn't exist, just trademarked it.
Right. It's yours.
It's mine. I'll take
love
it.
Yeah. Well, that, I mean, it's beautiful. And I love your heart right towards this conversation. It's so, so needed, especially from the perspective, you know, in which that you attack this issue. So, but let's shift gears a little bit too, because I want to hear about your authorship journey, right? And I know that you've been a writer, blogger for, gosh, years and years and years, I think, since we first met. I'm just curious about how you would describe your process in writing the book and, you know, what sort of illuminated you in this process, like what stood out to you in the process that maybe surprised you didn't realize, you know, before.
Yeah. As a first time author, I think one of the things that at least I struggled with, and I'm sure there's at least one other author, first timer listening to this, this will resonate with. I listened to a lot of people about what was like the kind of right way to do this thing, right? You hear a lot of different advice. You look at people, you see them, they're successful, and you're like, oh, well, they must know what they're doing, right? And there is some value to that, but you have to be really, really critical about who you listen to because you have to know yourself, right? So I'll give you a good example. I would listen to a lot of authors that multi-authors, and they would say, oh, well, my process is like, you know, what you got to do is you got to set a goal for number of words that you're going to write every day. And you got to set a time every day you're going to write. And that's how you get through it. Nonsense. That's not how I am. I'm a blitz writer. Okay. So every one of those writers that told me that, when I told them, well, my first weekend writing, I wrote 18,000 words. They were like, you did what? You 18,000? Yeah. 18,000 words in 2 days. They're like, that's unheard of. So it took me actually 28 days to write my book, but it took 5 years to write those 28 days. So what I guess the point I'm coming back to is the most important advice I could give to any author, and I guess the thing that that was illuminated for me throughout the process, and I think will help me as I move on to my second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth books, do it your way. Find your way and do it your way instead of trying to make yourself someone you're not. And I've fallen into this in a lot of other areas of my life where I see somebody do a thing and I'm like, oh, I want to be like that person. So I try to mimic their style. I've tried to get up at 5 a.m. so many times. I'm a night owl. I don't know why I keep trying to do it, but I keep trying to do it and it doesn't work. But when I embrace who I actually am and I work at night, I crush work. I crush work between 10 p.m. and 3 a.m. Love it. It's my favorite. Some people can't do that. They're like, that's crazy. That's not right. You should be going to sleep early, getting a good 8 hours and waking up nice and early. And like, but that's not me. And in the same way, writing a book, you're going to have people tell you, you got to wake up and write 1,000 words a day, or you got to write 1,000 words to close out the day, or you got to write 3 days a week, or they're going to tell you, you got to. What you got to do is figure out who you are. And that's how you write. I wrote in blitzes. I would write every time I sat down, I wrote about anywhere from 2,000 to 5,000 words. Bop, 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 just hit it with it. And I did a lot of reorganizing and I did my outlining and I re-outlined and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. One of the things I really appreciated about the process was just discovering that piece, because I felt like it was a lesson that could be applied in so many other areas.
Oh yeah. Make it about you and what's going to work for you. I mean, that's huge in that process, especially when there's, you know, clearly so many different ways and approaches to doing that and really doing anything. And with so much information out there, really has to be, you know, putting on these ears and eyes, so to speak, to where you for yourself can make the decision for what you know works for you, because you know yourself. And there is a book writing coach that I met recently who her name is Madeline Eno, and she actually helps and supports authors in sort of helping them create the structure they can be successful in how they write, because she's looking at aspects of their human design. She's like looking into all these factors of who you are and then helping you to write from that place of like, you know, what is really suited and, you know, fit for you as a writer, as a communicator, what have you. So I really love that you said that, because I think a lot of authors can really just take that in for a second. Just know that you can be successful, you can get your work done, and it be done in a manner that fits you.
Yeah. So that's, and you'll enjoy the process powerful. More. Like, you know, I've been writing since I was in high school. I've always been a writer. Like, for as long as I can remember, I wanted to be a screenwriter and a playwright when I was in high school. That was like one of my big things. And I wrote poetry in high school, and I used to write fiction. And then I got really into writing. You know, in 2008, I started my blog and I started writing about tech and I started writing about people and the intersection between people and technology and how technology changes us and how we change technology and all these different things, right? And then I started getting into leadership and brand and all these things, but I love writing. And what I've found is that I just released a blog post recently and I loved writing it because I told stories in it about I just released this post called "I'm Batman," and it's about, you know, how I put, when they ask for my name at Starbucks, I say Batman. And it's this whole story, and I tell all these stories about like the places I've done that and how it's worked out. And I just had so much fun writing it. And the reason I bring that up is that I found that when I was trying to write my book the way other people told me I should write my book, I wasn't having fun. When I had fun was when I worked the way that felt comfortable and natural to me. You know, it's like, I don't like wearing button-down shirts. I like wearing sweatpants. I feel more comfortable as a human in sweatpants or sweatpant jeans or like t-shirts and hoodies. That's who I am. So I'm more comfortable that way. And in the same way, when I sit down to write, I want to write the way I want to write. So if you're an author and you're going to go out there and you're going to write your book, you're writing your book. Don't listen to anybody else. Write your book your way, how you feel good, and enjoy the process, because you're writing something that will outlive you. You know, this book, I don't know how many copies it'll eventually ever sell, but I know it'll be around longer than me.
Definitely will. Definitely. That's the beauty of that as well, right? That this is going to be here and it's going to it's going to be available even after you're gone.
Yeah.
So, and I know that you are a really, really smart marketer, right? You are a coach or consultant, but I know that you know marketing really well. And there's so many authors, of course, that approach creating a book and getting it out there, and they do the hard work of publishing and then ask the question, okay, now what's next? Like, what can I do next? What has been your what next, and how has the book supported you as a coach and consultant now that you say that you're excited and grateful for?
So I'll be totally real with you, which is that I wish that shortly before publishing my book, I had a client that just published a book and said, I need to know how to market this, so that I could sit down and I could build out the entire plan. And then after doing that, I could look at it and go, oh, that's what I'm gonna do. Because it's so hard to do it for yourself, right? And I do know marketing really well, but I also, I don't assess my own variables the same way that I do the variables of a client, right? So for instance, I will take on way too much, just across the board. Too many projects, too many content projects, too many clients, too many, plus family, plus me, plus all, right? Too much. So when I build a strategy, I'm building a strategy as if that's all I do is I wrote the book and now I just got to promote the book. So every day I'm going to sit down, from 9 to 5, I'm just going to promote this book. But that's not going to happen. That's not how this works. But I will say I did one thing that I'm very proud of, and I did it really well. And I would encourage this. I don't know if it's led to a lot of book sales, but I do know it's led to a lot of awareness that I have the book, and it has led to some opportunities to speak, and it's led to some other things. So at the very least, I can say it was worth what I put into it, which is that I have a virtual assistant that I work with, and she's incredible. And one of the things I asked her to do was to go through my entire book and pull out everything that's quotable, something that's short and pithy, like an original Twitter, 140 characters, like something that's short and sweet. And I said, find every single one of them. Here's the digital version. Go through, pull out every single quote, put it in a database. And she did that. So then I went through and I approved all the ones I liked. And then she turned them into Instagram graphic type posts. And then we loaded them up in a scheduler. And I have had a post go out about my book virtually every day since my book was released January 25th-ish. I've had a post going out almost every single day. And that has been awesome because it at the very least gets people to see what the vibe of my book is about bit by bit by bit. So I'll say that's one big thing. The second thing that I did that I thought, again, don't know how many books this sold. I do know I had a big spike in purchases around this time, but I can tell you just for me, it was very satisfying and rewarding, is that I did a 2-day launch event. And at that launch event, I basically brought on a whole bunch of brilliant people. I think I had a total of like 16 guests or something. And I brought them each on to talk about a concept in the book from their perspective. They're an expert in this particular area, and we're going to talk about that aspect of the book. So I did a full day event on the first day where I talked to people about, the 3 pillars of lovable leadership: care, trust, and safe travels. I brought people on to talk about goal setting and strategy. I brought people on to talk about conflict. And I brought all these brilliant people on and authors, and we went through all of those amazing things. And then on the second day, we went through and we broke down a very specific part of the book called The 8 Commitments of the Team, which is part of the Safe Travels chapter, but it's about how do you create the environment to go from point A to point B with the entire team and create an environment of safety? What are the conditions and the commitments every member on the team has to make for that to occur? So we broke down every one of those pieces, and I recorded all of them. I did, it was a live cast of the whole thing. I took all the videos, put them up on YouTube. I took all the audio down and put them up as like little podcast audio episodes. So you can download any of that. You can watch any of that. It's freaking awesome. And regardless if anybody listened to it, which people did, and regardless if anybody bought any books, some people did, I got to spend time with these people. And I got to talk about the concepts that I spent 5 years writing about with people who are experts in those fields and get their take on it. And I just found that so incredibly rewarding. That I would do it again, even if it didn't sell another book. And same reason, like you do the podcast, yeah. Getting to talk to people is like one of the coolest parts of this whole thing.
Oh yeah, it totally is. It so is. And I just want to acknowledge you though, because you're doing the work of keeping the conversation going about your book. Whereas many authors struggle to do that. And it's kind of ghost town when it comes to content and social media opportunities that are there. So how you have repurposed it in the way that you have is, is brilliant. I mean, it may seem like, oh, you know, it's like probably tens of millions of other things, right, that could have been done. But, you know, you did, it sounds like you did it something, you did it in a way that works for you, first of all. And that was simple and didn't take up, like you said, a 9-to-5, you know, commitment, so to speak. You did it in a way that works for you and it has worked.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I'll give you a preview of what I'm thinking for 2023. I'm in the midst of, I have one more blog post that I'm writing this year, one more newsletter that goes out, and then I'm taking the last 2 weeks off and I go into my, like, my monk mode and I just go into a cave and I think. So I'm in my planning process for 2023. And one of the things I'm thinking for 2023 is that I want to actually start to do more in the way of TikToks and Reels. And same thing, I've got already all of these status updates. I've already got all of this stuff ready for me. The prompts are done. So all I got to do is wake up, pick one. And I'm going to talk about it. 30 seconds, 60 seconds. I'm going to talk about that piece of it. I'm going to ask people for what they think. And I'm going to let it go from there. So that's what something I'm going to try. It seems like something that's manageable. One of the things that I really struggle with is, as I mentioned before, biting off more than I can chew. So I really appreciate that you called out, like, finding something that is manageable. And also, you know, the repurposing side of it is a big core component of my strategy, because creating new stuff is like an ever-present drive for me. I love to create new stuff, but taking the stuff that you've already created and making sure that it gets the visibility that it deserves from all the effort that went into it, that's critical. So I'm trying to really be smart about it and take the stuff that's already been built and then again, not over-engineer the solution of promoting it. So just whip out the camera, go off for 30 seconds about a topic that is already near and dear to my heart, publish, move about the day. Only problem that I'm currently working on is what I mentioned earlier, is that I'm not a morning person. So it's like, that's the ideal time to do it. But like,
hey, yeah,
mornings, you know, so maybe I'll do it at the end of the day every day. Like, yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. Right. I am the night.
Yes. I love it, man. And I, again, I commend you because there's so much potential, I think, with your book and any other author that has a book. So as we start to kind of wrap up the conversation here, I would love for you to share any last parting words of advice. I'm going to ask for two, one for the leader, the new leader, someone who's growing their team and expanding. What words of advice you have to share with them? And then for anyone else who's a newbie author or is looking to become an author, what advice you would share with them as well?
Okay, so let me start with the leader, I guess. So it's important to note my book is really geared towards new managers. It really would work for anybody in a leadership role, but it's particularly for people who are good at a thing and they get moved into a managerial role, and now they got to deal with people and manage people. So the book is really written for the folks who are trying to learn how to adapt to this new environment. And I really, if I could boil down into like, you know, a fortune cookie kind of quote here, is put people first. You know, that's ultimately what this all comes down. I mean, literally put people so far out in front and so far first that you do it even if it costs you money. Like, people have to be at the heart of everything that you do. You have to be smart about who you hire. You have to be smart about how you deal with the people that are on your team. You have to be smart about the environment you create. You have to be smart about the words you use, the actions you take, the exhibit that the example that you set through the way that you are. All that stuff is critical. And the first and foremost thing is you have to put people first. You have to care about them. You have to trust them first. So, you know, you build an environment of trust, and you have to create safety for them on the way to the big goals that you're setting for them. If you can do those three things, I think you're in a really good position. And there's a whole book I wrote about all the other stuff, but that's like at the highest level, put people first, always make that your priority. For the author. Man, there's so many different sides of it. There's writing the book, there's promoting the book, there's the aftermath once the book is done. And there's so much to think about with all of it. I guess I would say take it slow and think about things, but always do something. Always move forward. I do this post every year called My Three Words. And one of your words for this year was author, because I want to remind myself I didn't write a book, right? Like I'm not a writer. I'm an author. I have a published book. I'm an author now. Like, I get to say that. And I also have to remember that in order to be an author, people need to read the book or buy the book. So every day I need to be reinforcing what that's about. And I need to make sure that that's part of the conversation around what it is that I do. When I go and talk on a stage about lovable leadership, it's not just about me and my opinion now. It's me and my opinion based in a published work that I researched and I poured myself into to create a really well-refined, edited, well put together, curated piece of work. So I would say the main thing is, like, keep in mind that this is a person who you are after you create it. And you have to continually reinforce that work that you did. Don't just, like, create it and then go. Like, this is now part of you. You get to take that with you. You earned it if you publish that book.
100%. And it's your topic. Yeah. It's your topic, and hopefully you enjoy the topic enough to keep talking about it too, you know, to be an active conversation about it. So those are a great, great piece of advice, Jeff. Thank you for that. And so glad we got to do this.
Yeah. So good. Yeah. I would love to do it a million times.
Yeah.
I'm going to have you online. It's going to be cool. So listeners, go check out Shareable because Parshall will subscribe because Parshall will be coming on.
Yes. Absolutely. And where can folks contact you, connect with you, reach out to you? Highly recommend, by the way, definitely pick up your copy of The Lovable Leader. Jeff, as you already heard, has put so much into it. So Jeff, let them know where they can contact you and buy a book.
Cool. Thank you, Parshall. I appreciate it. Yeah. Easiest place to find me, I put together a website that's basically like a menu of options to find everything that is me. And that's just jgibbard.com, jgibbard.com. jgibbard.com, it'll point you to my book, my content, my speaking, my everything. If you want to connect with me on Mastodon, you can find the link there as well.
Beautiful.
Or LinkedIn, and, or wherever.
Or LinkedIn, yes.
Yeah.
Last question. This is my fun question I ask at the end of all of our episodes, which is, what is your one word? So one word goes from Jeff to the rest of the world. What is the one word that you share?
Love.
Ooh. That's a good one.
It's on point, right? Yeah. It's on brand. Lovable leader. And like, look, if I only get one, that's it's got to be love.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
it. It's all through my house. It's all through my work.
Yeah. Yeah. Even Spider-Man's color is red.
Yeah.
Got that down. Got that on point over there. So yeah. Everything's on brand. Exactly. Jeff, this is so good. I'm glad we got to do this again. And for those tuning in, I highly recommend just connecting with Jeff. He's one of the coolest people I know when it comes to just someone that you know is going to be honest with you straight up and give you his very best, because he is coming from a place of love and genuinely wanting to help people. So that much I acknowledge and appreciate you for.
Thank you.
Yes, yes. And thanks everybody again for tuning in to this amazing conversation. Hope you took some notes and that it was valuable for you. And we'll see you again next time on The Author's Leverage.
You've been tuning into The Author's Leverage Podcast. If you're new here, be sure to subscribe so you can stay up to date with all of our latest guest appearances and receive the best of the best strategies on successful authorship today. And be sure to connect with us and with today's guests using the links below this episode. If you're interested in turning your bestseller into a premium and profitable online course, head on over to our website and schedule a call with us today. Until next time, remember, publishing creates credibility, but products create cash. You can repurpose your book as a learning experience to make the impact and the income you want as an author. We'll see you on the next episode of The Author's Leverage.